of the Silver Shield Exchange.
Actually, hold on 1 second. Take off the weight vest and then do the show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Silver Shield Exchange. I'm your host. My name is Ryan Brooks, joined as always by Chris Duane. SilverShieldExchange.com is the website. The Greatest Truth Never Told on YouTube is the YouTube channel for now. And Silver Shield Podcast at Hush.com is the email address if you'd like to reach us. Had quite the week since we spoke last. Got a lot of different issues to talk about here.
Let's start off with our little dramas.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, we try to talk about Jade Helm and just point out, using some reason or just trying to point out why we're not afraid of it and why we recommend others not being afraid of it. And I believe I took it a little too far, Chris. You know, I know a lot of listeners are aware, but in case you're not aware, on Monday, I got the idea to put my theory to use, put it
in action.
Yeah,
well, explain it in the frame of reference of the video you did the week before that, saying, you know, the alternative media is a joke and that, you know, all these guys out there putting out this media, they're putting out all these, you know, fear porn things, getting you emotionally, you know, fearful about things outside of our control. They never offer the solutions of, you know, working on things that you can control. And then, you know, you kind of, you know, blame the Pete Santillis and Dave Hodges and Alex Joneses of the world. But then, you know, halfway through the video, you said, you know what, they would be nothing without you. You're the one that are empowering them. You're the one that wants this stuff. And, you know, I know from my own experience that, you know, whenever I put up any doom porn titled thing, it gets at least 5 times the views of any positive titled video. And, you know, to me, I think the positive stuff is life changing stuff and, you know, most impactful, most powerful, best use of time. And yet, you know, if I put top 5 places not to be when the dollar collapses or anything with World War III or ISIS in it, you know, it's easily 30,000 views, if not, you know, 1 million views. And, you know, and we've experienced that in our own thing. And so, yeah, then you go on Monday to test your theory that, you know, fear and doom sells and it's viral and it's contagious and it's sick and it's from the viewers, you know, up, I think. So go ahead. What did you do?
So I took a video of Robin Sage. Mm-hmm. And it's green.
Gotta be 25 years old. I mean, it's so obvious. It's like almost Back to the Future age.
And another thing is the video itself. I mean, anyone who watches it, or at least I thought so, which shows how I didn't really think enough about this. But if you watch it, it's pretty obvious it's not a live firefight. Mm-hmm. There's soldiers wearing reflective vests. There's guys getting fake shot where they like roll over, put their hand up like, I'm hit.
Or police officers directing traffic.
Yes, there's people driving through the intersection, driving through the firefight, looking like deer, just kind of, oh, what's going on? Da-da-da. So it's pretty obvious it's not real. But I uploaded it, and I said that it was Jade Helms gone live, firefight with the militia. And then I put some hokey explanation. I picked a random town in Texas. I picked Whitney, Texas, and said, this is happening. And I put a random time in the morning and said, God help us, stand your ground.
Yeah.
And lo and behold.
Hold on. One other very important factor is this.
Yes.
This is a channel that had 0 subscribers.
Google Plus sucks.
0 subscribers. Zero. So this is the part I find most amazing. So I have close to 100,000 subscribers and, you know, on any given day, I may get between 5 and, you know, 15,000 views on any video that I put up, good, bad, or indifferent. That's about what it's going to take. So about 10% of that. So now we got a channel with absolutely no following whatsoever, which means that somebody somehow either Google's got this fucking thing that, you know, automatically puts any doom porn on the sideshow that gets there, or that the viral nature of this and that it was spread throughout the forums and, oh my God, look at this and emails here and email there. It blows my mind that anybody even found this video, much less go ahead. What happened?
Well, I made sure to tag it, Jade Helm, all the conspiracy stuff, Jade Helm, FEMA camps, martial law. I tried to put as many tags as I could. But the other thing I did that was interesting, Chris, was that I tagged every person that I've seen reporting just the craziest, most fear-mongering, most irrational, most nonsensical, most asinine stuff that I have seen yet on Jade Helm. I tagged every single one of those people, alternative news personalities, on the video to see if they would take the bait. And a few of them did.
Yeah, and they took it bad and
they made it worse.
Yeah, and as a purveyor of information, I mean, the first thing you got to do is like verify it. I mean, the first thing I would do is, besides looking at the incredibly poor quality of it, the fact that it's a, you know, zero subscriber channel putting up this stuff, I mean, that should ring a couple bells. Nobody made any contact to you. Like, none of the guys that actually reported it made contact to you. I think Pete Santilli, you know, just put up the video and be like, oh, we can't verify this, but oh my God, dude, you know, and you know, there's no way he reached out to you. I gave you mad props or whatever weird terminology he did, but, yeah. So tell how it progressed. And then, cause I think this is important to show how there's no hope in the truth movement, because when the time does come, the animal instincts, the fear, the psychosis is going to reach fever pitch where, you know, you cannot be speaking logic into this wind.
And ultimately, that's kind of a lesson I learned the hard way with this video. So within, I don't know, 12 hours or so, well, within the first couple of hours, the video already went viral.
Yeah, you had 18,000 views by the time.
By the afternoon.
You know, yeah, like
in the within morning.
4 hours.
And I have a life, you know, I wasn't sitting there just watching it all day. I was going to and from places, had things to do. I'd come inside, check the computer. Oh, wow, now it's at 25. Now it's at 30. Okay, now I'm starting to get death threats. Okay, people are mad, this, that, the other. You know, people
are calling the Whitney, Texas
people are calling
cops.
The police.
Yeah.
You know, confirming that this is a hoax. And just a lot of chaos being created by this. And it got to the point where I thought, all right, interesting, but now this is interesting turns sad to see how many people are falling for this so badly. And ultimately, now towards the end of the day, we've got InfoWars covering the story because so many people are freaked out. So many people are worried that InfoWars had to make a story to tell everyone that it's fake because people couldn't figure it out for themselves. So they had to do it for them. So the InfoWars Nightly News was dedicated to proving the Jade Helm video hoax. Other people, as you said,
and not even like, you know, don't worry, it's a 20-year-old video from Robin Sage. No, tune in tonight for a 20-hour or 20-minute discussion about this. I mean, they could have easily just said no, it's or not even cover it at all. No, it's a 20-year-old video. It's bullshit, and that's the end of the story. But no, we're gonna get some views out of it.
They made it. Well, it was made the news. They made their nightly news basically.
Because this is another factor. Hello, we're. What, 2 weeks into Jade Helm? I mean, back in March, this was like, Obama's coming. We're going to invade Texas. You know, this is it. We're in Jade Helm now where everybody was all fearful. And there isn't a news story other than your fake story about Jade Helm anywhere. Even Dave Hodges, he's not even mentioning Jade Helm. So do you see, folks, how they build up these stories to get a whole bunch of views about irrational thoughts about anything outside of your control, pump and pump and pump it for all the views, all the advertising, all that other stuff, and then they move on to something else. Like, unless you realize you're being emotionally manipulated by your, quote, leaders, the guys that you trust and follow, you know, nothing's going to change, guys. You're the ones that are empowering them.
And so ultimately, by the end of the day, as I said earlier, I put out some bait. Well, I look at it this way, Chris, that by the end of the day, I took bait by seeing, wow, this video's got 68,000 views. InfoWars and all these other people are covering it. I might as well just put myself out there and say, hey, I made the video. I'm going to take my 10 minutes of fame and tell you why I made the video as an attempt to maybe motivate others to take a second look at themselves. However, I look at that as kind of, you know, maybe poking someone in the eye and then saying, hey, I poked you in the eye, douchebag. You're not going to win any friends like that. So, and that's why I took down my video. It just made a bad situation worse. Ultimately, I offended a lot of people. I showed how, which is frightening in a way, Chris, that so many people are just one YouTube video away, one crappy, easily debunked YouTube video away from going nuts. And it really touches on.
Well, hold on. Let's clarify what the nuts is. The nuts in this case right now is keyboard warrior. Oh, I'm going to mail some keyboard thing. Meanwhile, these people are not kicking, you know, ass life in the ass. They're not proactively doing anything. So, you know, all the threats, all the phone calls, all that other stuff, that has nothing to do with getting them off their fat ass. So they can get upset all they want, but until they're actually doing something in the world to make their lives better, nothing's changed. All they're doing is still living that same, you know, watching the doom porn and getting emotionally fearful, but their lives are not being changed at all. Like, if you really believe in all this doom porn stuff, you're going to do what Ryan Brooks is doing every day. I mean, this kid's doing epic workouts. He did, 700 burpees and 20-mile runs, and now he's got weight vests and stuff. Because he's keeping himself physically fit because he knows that if tough times comes, it's only going to be daddy there to protect him and his girls and his family. So, and the same thing with me, man. Like, I've been preparing mentally, physically, emotionally for this for a long time and working on the things that I can control. In fact, that's when the main reason why, you know, this end of the summer, I'm done with YouTube, man. I cannot keep up with the drama, the hand holding, the comments, the, you know, all the other stuff that's going on there. So I want to also bring up my little drama too. So Ryan had a good taste of the audience or the feel of the masses that are listening and following all this stuff. And, you know, people criticize me for, you know, calling out Alex Jones and saying Mark Dice is creepy and, you know, kind of poking an eye at a lot of the other guys that are kind of at the information dissemination level. Like I don't know, maybe because I'm doing it and I see them and, you know, I can see all the stuff that they do, which is why I came up with Listen to All and Follow None, because I have yet to find maybe a handful, if that, people that are actually in this kind of thing that are really passionate about it, really believe in, really got their head on straight about it. I had a rival, I'm not going to name any names. I had a rival YouTuber, who I had done some work with. File a copyright claim against my video that I did of our conversation. And, you know, he claimed that it was his property and filed a copyright claim. And if you know anything about YouTube, you know, you get three strikes and you're out. And, you know, I sent him a nice email first thing in the morning. I saw it and, you know, figured maybe it was a mistake. I got no response. I called him on his cell phone. Within 2 minutes, I got hung up on. So I'm like, wow, this is really weird. So I sent him another nice email saying, hey, you know, I'm really dumbfounded that you would hang up on me. All I'm asking you to do is if, you know, take away the copyright strike and I'll delete the video, even though I think I have fair right to it, too. It's me speaking most of the time. You know, again, another negative thing you know, that I stole. And you know, this is like a 3-year video. I mean, this is not, you know, not anything new. And I haven't talked to this guy in a long time either. So I don't know what caused it, what happened to it. But in your case, Ryan, I think like, and we're going over all these Robert Moore, archetypes and stuff like that. When, and you recognize this and pointing it out to yourself. And immediately once you start seeing the psychology behind people's actions and what's going on, it allows you to look at things more logically. So Ryan, after all this, I mean, this is not easy stuff, getting death threats and, you know, people calling for you and stuff like that, but
you get sued for inciting riots.
Yeah, sued or, you know, people, you know, all sorts of stuff. But what Ryan pointed out is he goes, you know, me putting up that video was a know-it-all trickster. And if you guys have read Robert Moore and, the King Warrior, Magician Lover, the shadow archetypes of our adult selves, will manifest in times when you're, you know, either most stressed or, you know, you're angry or whatever. And by Ryan even putting up this video, you know, well, I thought it was kind of, you know, funny. You know, he pointed it up and I mean, I was just astounded by the psychological experiment that it played in the social media. It was the know-it-all trickster that, you know, kind of showed in Ryan's thing by saying, hey, haha, I'm smarter than you guys because I know that this is a 20-year-old video. It can be easily debunked. And, you know, obviously it's not real, you know, from a YouTube channel with zero subscribers. It was the know-it-all trickster of Ryan's personality that put it up there. Meanwhile, you know, a better way of approaching it is using, you know, positive, energy, to show that these things are happening. But, you know, the reality is without Ryan doing that, we wouldn't have seen how irrational, how viral, how much this doom porn spreads, with no verification, no logic even behind it. And that's what's really got me, you know, understanding that when the anger phase does kick off, it's going to be bad. You know, people are going to be running around with the, you know, with the like chickens with their heads on fire. Like, I mean, it's going to be bad. But to get back to my run in with this other YouTube guy, I handled myself and this is like a day, the same day or the day after Ryan's got all of his stuff. So I'm wondering if it's retribution because people know that I'm associated with him. I start thinking things. And, I decided to handle it like a man. And, so I sent him a nice email. I called him. He hung up on me. I sent him another nice email. And, you know, I gave him my word I would take it down, you know, just remove the strike. It was a simple, you know, thing to happen. And he came back to me and he said, okay, I'll take it down so long as you promise to, delete the video immediately. I said, you know, which I said in the email before I would do. And, you promised not to do any bad videos about me. So I said, you know, I told him, I said, okay, I promised I would take down the video. I said it three times that I would immediately delete it. It's not a problem. Just remove the copyright strike. But are you really going to infringe my First Amendment rights and, my free speech over this? I said, I have every right to speak whatever I do, and I've had more than enough ammunition to come after you in the past over the stuff that you have done, but I have not because you were kind to me when we did work together. Now, we haven't talked in 3 years. I have no animosity towards you. In fact, I'm getting off of YouTube altogether because I see that it's a fool's errand to, you know, try to, you know, wake the masses. I'm going to focus on the people and the things that I can control. So he didn't write back to me for the next day. And the next day he goes, well, thank you for telling me how you really feel. He did end up removing the copyright strike. I did end up, removing the video off my channel. And it was over, but it shows that even the good guys, are prone to acting irrational or vindictive or something like that. And, you know, so while Ryan got a good taste of, the masses responding to, you know, this irrational fear and soon to be very real fear, which is even going to be worse. You know, even the kind of good guys in the community are not out for you. They're out for ratings. They're out for, views. They're out for, subscribers and stuff like that. So, you know, be cognizant of that. And that's the number one reason why I say listen to all and follow none.
Another lesson I learned, Chris, about myself, and this is for everybody listening, hopefully they can learn something from my experiences. I read, right around that same time I released that video, I read about everything that you say and do is a reflection on the agreements that you've made with yourself. So if you call somebody stupid and you don't know them, well, you would think that about yourself. If you've got a bad attitude, you're making fun of people, things like that, well, you're really attacking that part of yourself mm-hmm. that you don't like. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I have been upset with these folks that think violence is going to solve the country or anyone who, you know, we're going to take the country back. And they mm-hmm. like to dress mm-hmm. up and have their guns and hoorah and all this. They're led around by people that have not been in combat. I don't want to pound my chest, but from my experience, I've always from day one, wait until combat happens. And it seems like more and more people think they want it, but I just so badly, because of my scars from being in combat, want to tell people so badly and so dearly from the bottom of my heart, you do not want combat. You do not want body parts. You do not want blood in your mouth. You do not want the sound that only a human can make. And I see that being perpetrated onto people. And it's just, that's me wanting to speak out. So when I get down on you and say things like you're a Fisher Price patriot and waxy mustache hillbilly, things like that, I'm mad at myself for even being in the military, going to Afghanistan, getting blown up and watching my friends get hurt for a lie. I'm still mad about that. When I make fun of people in the alternative media, it's because I'm still mad at myself that I wasted 2 years of my life being all show and no go. And lo and behold, I've got all show and no go coming for me hard. But hey, actions speak louder than words. It was shocking and sad to me, Chris, to see that the supposed good guys, the people that are awake and are going to save us from tyranny.
That's the other point I kept saying.
They were worse than the masses. They are more angry, more aggressive. I'm getting death threats. The people in the militia sending me call sign coded messages. This is Comanche 2 Bravo. I want to meet you, boy. Come on. And the reason why I stopped, and I know, see, ultimately, when you play a joke on someone, the joke's on you. Yeah. And so I know to a lot of people right now.
The know-it-all trickster.
I'm in the Illuminati. I'm a government agent. I'm a coward. All these things. And sure, go ahead. Ha ha. But at the end of the day, I did it for my family because I do not want I looked at it as why invite more chaos into your life when we're already living in a chaotic world.
Yeah.
Washington's a long way from Texas. I thought it was pitiful that libertarians, freedom people were going to sue me because they fell for it that bad. That also freaked me out because I know how jacked up the system is. Mm-hmm. You can say, hey, that guy looked at me wrong, and you could probably go to jail. I mean, if the person makes a big enough stink about it. So when people run to the state, run to the man, run to mommy and daddy to say, oh, he scared me, get him. I got that going on. And then I got people who say they're going to come see me. Again, I don't want to bring that on my children. I don't want to go to jail for something that's stupid.
Yeah,
and I think we're in a bad enough situation as it is in this world, or a crazy, unpredictable, chaotic enough time. So I shut it all down. I know there's people who are just having a field day, and that's fine. But I think it also proves that there's no news on Jade Helm. I made the news.
Yeah, I did the Happy Jade Helm video, Happy Jade Helm Day video. I got 15,000 views and all these downvotes like, why are you making fun of it? And because, we had almost 6 months of hype surrounding it. And now the biggest hypers are, moving on to some other story that they can get more views and more fear about. So enough about this topic. I think we beat it to death. What do we have? The Alex Jones and
Yeah, Hope Loop versus Fear Loop. Alex Jones.
Fear Loop calls out the Hope Loop.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
All right, so Alex Jones, Alex Jones calls out Joel Osteen. All right, so Joel Osteen is a mega church pastor down in Texas, and you've got to have seen him at some point. He's on, every Sunday. He's a very smiley guy. I listened to his messages when I was in my depression, and I will say he really did help me by, focusing on, positive aspects instead of the negative thoughts that were beating my head. But Alex Jones calls him out and says, all these mega pastors are fake, and, makes a connection between him and the Pope. The Pope's calling for, global government, and Joel Osteen doesn't say anything negative. He doesn't fight against, the abortion. He doesn't mention anything about, the wars or anything. It's all happy, feel good stuff. And it has its place. And I think Joel knows, very well what his role is and why he's so successful is because he purposely doesn't bring that. And he brought, a whole different, I think they call him charismatics, which is kind of a spooky term, cause it's kind of like narcissistic, charismatic type thing. Version of Christianity, like just believe good enough and good things will come to you. And there's a lot to be said about that because it kind of gets into, the abundance mentality, be good to people and you'll find good people to come to you and, maybe change your heart. And, I just find it ironic though, that Alex Jones, who's the penultimate, leader of the fear loop to get you to emotionally worry about things outside of your control, and Joel Osteen, another example of the hope loop, just hope in God and, everything will turn out and right and your rewards in heaven, you can kind of put up with it. And, here you got this Hegelian dialectic of either worrying for things outside of your control or praying for or help from outside of your control. Neither one of them will empower the individual to walk away and recognize the world for what it is. And focus on the real things that you can control. I listen to a lot of Joel Osteen's sermons. Sometimes I'll do it just when I'm packing and I'm in a negative mood. And the only thing that it gave me a red flag, besides the fact that he doesn't point out anything negative, and he's entitled to do that. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who just don't want to talk about this stuff, and there is a good case to be made for positivity out there. I cannot see any case for negativity like Alex puts out, and we're going to talk about his next video. But the only thing that Joel that ever read a red flag about me was he did a sermon about authority and obeying authority. And I think that is an original sin of Christianity that the Council of Nicaea placed in that Bible, and then it spread throughout the whole Christian lands. You know, if you really believe in Jesus Christ, he did anything but obey authority. He was one of the first rebels there. He, you know, went against the religious authorities of the Pharisees. He went against the, you know, all the social norms. I mean, he talked to lepers when nobody would do that. All the public things. I mean, this guy was a rebel. And he really, you know, I think, you know, really showed a different consciousness, this Christ consciousness out there. But the Council of Nicaea put in there in Romans, in Ephesians, you know, slaves obey your masters. And Joel Osteen brought that up. And I thought that was weird. Like, well, you know, here, how's this positivity guy bringing up slaves obey your masters? Not, I don't think he used that terminology, but obey, you know, earthly leaders and stuff like that. And it gets into this collectivist messiah, this collectivist, you know, prophecies out there, you know, to getting the masses to obey a higher authority, which is man. And if anybody knows about the Council of Nicaea, it was, you know, a turning point in the church where, you know, now became an organized institutional religion, not just a spiritual connection to a higher power through the teachings of Jesus Christ. Now it was going to become you know, commercialized, for lack of better terms. It needed to be, you know, branded. It needed to be packaged. It needed to be monetized. It needed to have structure. It needed a corporate structure. I mean, these are all kind of the basic building blocks of any business nowadays. They just use this most powerful, you know, mind control, this religious mind control, to control people. And what they did was they took all these books that had been written about Jesus Christ. Notice Jesus never wrote any books that are in the Bible. It's all, in fact, if the Bible was ever introduced into court as evidence of anything, it would be thrown out immediately for hearsay, because it's not any, it's what other people said that this guy said. So, I mean, you know, it'd be inadmissible in court because of that. And yet we have so many people who live their lives by it and also turn a blind eye that the people that put together these books that chose picked and choose. These weren't the only books that were written there. There's a lot of books that were written that were even more popular that were left out of the Bible because it didn't fit with the social doctrine that they were trying to fill. So while Romans is in there, slaves obey your masters, and Ephesians, slaves obey your masters, is in there. And I've used this quote 1,000 times, the Gospel of Thomas. Now, I've heard about this guy, Doubting Thomas. Why is Doubting Thomas? To me, I like the doubters. Those are the guys that are listening to All and Follow None. Those are the ones that are sticking their fingers in the eyes of the people that are you know, blindly following other people. You know, so I immediately was like, Thomas? Yeah, well, I don't remember Gospel of Thomas. And when I went in there, I read one line in there that has turned my whole view on Christianity around. And it's hearsay, but it's hearsay from a Doubting Thomas that was purposely left out of the Council of Nicaea's Bible. And it said something to the effect that Jesus said, if you bring forth what is within you, it will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, it will destroy you. You know, basically saying like heaven and hell are here. Your heaven is releasing the seed that God implanted in you, your skills, your talents, your passions, and releasing it upon the world. You will find heaven here. You will resonate throughout all of eternity for impressing upon the consciousness of all the people that you come in contact with. You will live, you know, forever. This is the kind of thing that I'm interpreting off of this. And your hell is the listening to the demonic voices that are holding you back, the toxic people that, you know, tell you can't do something. You suppress the things that you really want to do, and you do the checkbox thing of life of going to school, going to college, learning a trade, getting married, taking on debt, and realizing at 50 years old that you haven't done a thing in your life that you've been passionate about and that you've wasted your life. I can think of no greater hell than the person that's standing there. So, you know, I've kind of gone off subject, but the whole obey authority of this Christianity thing is like an original sin. It's a mind control mechanism to keep slaves, allowing this collectivism, these psychopaths that profit off the top of these things. And trust me, Joel's very wealthy off of singing this message. So is Alex. So is you know, Creflo Dollar and his $65 or $85 million G5 jet that he asked his poor followers to help pay for so he could help spread the word. And then the other point that I kept pointing out with all these Christians, you know, they go, oh, you don't believe in God. I do believe in God. Like, this is not about like, you know, I'm an atheist and I'm a, you know, the most ultimate form of narcissism where I'm the center of the world and there is nothing greater than me. I do believe that there's a benevolent intelligence. I do believe there is a God, but I don't believe that, you know, I have to go beg at the feet of some religious collectivist to get in touch with that. In fact, I think they're the biggest roadblock into having people getting in connection to into there. You know, we need to get out into nature. We need to get really connect with God and really see what's within. So I'm not about like, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't believe in God. This is about religious collectivism, the psychopaths that manipulate the masses by spreading lies down to the masses to get them to willingly sacrifice up to the top. This is about the hypocrisy of the Pope. You know, I mean, somebody said the one ring of that's on the Pope's finger could feed an entire village for a year. You know, preaching out to the masses that money is evil, and yet what do? They're always handing out their basket for money. You know, if they truly walked the talk, and you know, they wouldn't be doing that. And then, you know, specifically, I was a Catholic. I was brought up Catholic. You know, you cannot, no Catholic, and then forget about just being Catholic. No Christian religion out there has a lick to say about peace and love and following Jesus Christ. When you look at the sins that were created on the backs of these religious indoctrinations, the Crusades, the you know, the Inquisitions, the genocides, the justification of slavery. You know, the support of the Nazi regime, and now the Pope calling for a global government. Like, you know, here's supposedly God's emissary on Earth, and he's acting for more man control over the Earth. If anything, the Pope should be, you know, praying to God, saying, "Hey, open the hearts of these people, and let you know this Christ consciousness into there." Talking about how, you know, not to empower these psychopaths. I mean, the Pope wants to empower more collectivist psychopaths for more control over something that is totally God's control, which is this global warming stuff. It has everything to do with the sun and the sunspot cycle. So this, to me, is a huge turning point. I've noticed that the Pope's popularity numbers amongst American Christians is at almost an all-time low, which I can't believe is worse than the Pope before that actually looked like the evil emperor from Star Wars, which is worse than, you know, the pedophiles and all the whole scandal that went along there in the Catholic Church, implicitly covering up sexual predators that manipulated all these things. I mean, I could go on forever about this. The point is, you know, Alex Jones, Joel Osteen, both collectivist messiahs, both would have you look upon them and give to them and support them as they spread this message that, you know, either some shadow government's going to come get them or some shadow God's going to come save them. Ultimately, at the end of the day, for both of them to debunk both of the hope loop and the fear loop, nobody's coming to save you. Nobody's coming to get you. You are your life. You are the savior. You're the one that needs to take focus and 100% charge of your life. Bring out what's within inside of you. Don't worry about a thing outside of your control. If it happens, then you can deal with it then. If you can't do anything about it, then don't worry about it. It's going to happen anyways.
Got a couple of news articles to go over for the week here. We'll start with just a quick one. And I just want to put this in perspective for folks. And I think Chris will –
Can you just do the Alex Jones comes out of the closet?
Sure.
Because it's so stupid. So I saw this one video, Alex Jones comes out of the closet, which is obviously a catchy title meant to just get views. And it's Alex, I think, naked, maybe not, with socks hanging off his ears, talking about how he's coming out of the closet and now he's trans species. You know, he's half dog, half man. And if you don't support his stance, you're a racist, you're a sexist, you're a hypocrite, homophobe or whatever. And it's obviously a trickster mentality, going about this, Bruce Jenner transsexual thing. But the only comment that I left on there, I said, is this really the best that the truth movement has to offer? I mean, this guy is unhinged, and yet he's the biggest voice out there, the most well-funded voice. I mean, if none of the other things that I've talked about shows, I mean, this guy, you would think, like, if he, I can understand maybe doing this kind of stuff to get noticed, to get popularity, to get followers, but he's now at the top of his game with all sorts of people following him, and this, he's still pulling this stuff. Come on.
I just saw a fat guy who needs to do more burpees. That's all I saw watching that. Again, if you're fat, you're part of the problem. That's all I got to say. I mean, I don't dislike fat people, but I just really, that's the thing that gets me angry. You know, you want to be fat and not do anything for yourself and then say you're going to be a part of the revolution or whatever. It's just, it shows everyone. All show, no go. So yeah, we got the fat guy being all show, no go. Interesting points. Chris, I wanted to bring this up with you just quickly, because I see it's, as a veteran, I look at this maybe differently than a lot of people. This article is from StarsAndStripes.com. Army to recruiters treat armed citizens as security threat. Since the quote-unquote shooting in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where Marines were supposedly killed by the supposed terrorist who was supposedly radicalized on the internet, we've seen this outbreak of concerned citizens, activists, and militia members, according to this article, who have gone to recruiting stations to stand guard with their weapons to protect the soldiers. And now the Army has put a memo out to recruiters warning them to stay away from the people with guns who are there to protect them and to report them to local law enforcement if they feel threatened. I just want to say this, Chris, because like I told you off air, when Fort Hood happened, I was in the military, and I remember thinking to myself, rules or no rules, I'm going to be armed. I don't care. August 9th, 2009, sitting on Route Bobby, convinced I was going to die, was when I turned from a trendy person who was scared of guns, someone who never had a gun, never was allowed to even have squirt guns as a kid. On that day, I decided if I come home and I'm alive, I will never, ever, ever, ever be taken advantage of or be in a position where some dingbat, goofy American is going to kill me after I've been through this. And because of that experience, that turned me into a great supporter of the Second Amendment. With that being said, after the Fort Hood shooting, I didn't care what rules there are, but mm-hmm. I was armed. And I just think that this is thank you for your service on steroids. They don't need you standing there protecting them. The badass guys in the military are probably already armed. They don't care about rules. They are going to take protecting themselves into their own hands. What do you think?
Yeah, my only experience, when I was in Kosovo, we were going on this raid, pre-dawn raid onto this village that was on the border of Kosovo and Moldavia, some other little teeny shit nation. And our commanders were like, this is supposedly a drug transit point, because if you remember all the ethnic cleansing and all the stuff that was going on in the whole area, all those militants soon realized that war is really not profitable, and eventually turned into gangs. And the gangs said, they imported drugs, they stole children, I guess Moldavia's got some of the most beautiful women, and sell them into sex slavery and all sorts of stuff. But this village that we were supposed to raid at, pre-dawn, I mean, we rolled in there with like 400 Marines and, I don't know how many Humvees, 80 Humvees or something ridiculous like that. They had snipers, on location the night before. It was on this border region that the UN had. We had to get clearance from them days in advance before we were even allowed to approach the border. The U.S. commander at the place said, that's where the drugs have to be coming in. There must be something up. And all right, guys, we're going to go get some. So, we got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We rolled in there. We got the Metallica blaring in our, headsets and stuff like that. And, the rules of engagement were specifically not to even have a round chambered, and not to have any magazine in the clip when we roll in there. And I'm like, fuck, they just pumped all this up that this could be like a drug shootout and stuff like that. I'm not fucking around with my magazine and round in chamber. So I had magazine round in chamber, even though it was against the SOPs or the ROEs. And you know, you're right, Ryan. Like, when it comes time, the real men are going to do what they need to do regardless of what the collective tells them. You know, if you ever hear something that goes against your common sense and self-interest in times of crisis, especially in times of crisis, you need to, you know, rebel against, you know, what you are hearing and have faith that you are the end result, because in times of crisis, following the leader is most likely way of getting you killed. And I think that it's far better for individuals now to, you know, have those little acts of rebellion and do what's in your best self-interest.
I could just see myself being in the military, seeing some guy show up with an AR saying, "I'm here to protect you." And I'll say, "No, no, carry on. Go live your life. We got this. All right, bud. I'm not falling for the thank you for your service. I'm going to protect you because no one's fighting for your freedom or liberty in Iraq or Afghanistan, and they can protect themselves."
And just to give the final point, we finally roll up on this village, and the PSYOPs group had Metallica One blaring on these out speaker systems that would fill up the whole valley with you know, Metallica One, you know, and you know, we went in there, took perimeters, you know, raided these people. And they were just poor farmers, man. I was never more embarrassed of being a Marine. The look of horror on these people's faces, that we must look like just death-dealing zombies to them, with Metallica blaring, you know, all these guys jacked up, tattooed, you know, rifling around all their possessions. We found, I think, 40,000 euros in cash, which was this guy's entire life savings. They don't have banks out there. And we found it, and they confiscated it, saying that it had probably something to do with drugs. Like, the whole thing could have been a setup by a rival farmer who, I mean, it just horrible stuff that we do to these people, and it affects them forever. And no wonder they hate us. You know, the guys that are, you know, complaining against Iran, this guy that I had this little spat with, he was a, you know, defender of, or a, an antagonist. He was all upset about what was going on in Iran, that we allowed them to do this. And I said, did you, in this email I wrote back to him, I said, did you ever look into the history of why they hate us? I said, you know, the coup of Mossadegh, because he asked for 50% of the oil revenues that came out of there, and BP overthrew him with the CIA, then installed a puppet named the Shah, who had this devastating secret police called the Savaka, terrorized the nation for 20 years. And then once these people finally got their own freedom, what do? We go support Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons in an 8-year Iran-Iraq war where they lost 1 million men. I said, and then for how many long we've invaded every other country around their borders. Do you think any reason why the Iranians might see us as ill? I mean, there's a whole generation, a whole group of people who have never not known us to be antagonistic towards Iran. And I think that was part of one of the reasons why he helped took down this copyright strike against me and reversed his position, because I would just fucking destroy him if he ever had me on his show again.
It's one disturbing trend I'm seeing. Both Democrats and Republicans agree. We got to do something about Iran. It's just a matter of exactly what. But we have to do something. None of us want to act like adults and look at points you're bringing up as far as look at what we've done to them. I find it interesting, Chris, so many people that want to do something about Iran have never been to the Middle East, and maybe they just can't fathom the horror that we have caused. I mean, I was talking to my buddy the other day, he went to Iraq. He says, "I know I helped create ISIS. I mean, I was having a bad day and a kid walked up to me asking me for water. So I just put a shotgun in his face and said, 'If you don't go away, I'm going to blow your head off.'" I mean, these things happen commonplace from Iraq to places you were at. I mean, all over. And we refuse to look at why they hate us. Instead, we think about more ways to, you know, stick our noses where they don't belong. And this ties into our other issue we haven't
brought up.
Well,
hold on. Sure. I mean, this is another good point. So you have a group of people who have been invaded by foreigners who are there to empower some psychopath puppet governor that, you know, has all these draconian rules to steal the natural resources, to empower these corporations that come in, that pump all the oil out, all the military industrial complex. Then the musclemen, the Gregorian Guard, you know, pigs that they have rolling around there. Sticking guns in the face of children, killing people, bombing people, all this other stuff.
All day.
No, we, you know, they're bad people.
And yet they don't see like how when you put a video on a channel that's got zero subscribers, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to come get you. I'm pissed off at you. Like think about that. Like there's a whole billion amount of Muslims out there that have been attacked, brutalized, genocide, bombed and murdered, and they have no right to retaliate against you. And yet some people in our quote truth movement are threatening violence upon you for putting up a fucking video?
Is there hope?
No, there isn't.
But that's the other point. I mean, you know, I think about guys that they've killed men, women, and children. And they didn't even, sometimes it wasn't even on purpose. It was, hey, light up that house. We just took fire from that house. Light it up with a 50 cal. All right, now we need to go in the house. Oh, whoops. And they have to live with that for the rest of their lives. I mean,
and maybe dump 50 horror. Bucks. Here, sorry for your loss. Here's
and that's things
bucks.
I was experiencing where we had to go clean up after the artillery because they bombed the wrong area, accidentally hit a village. And so on my very first dismount mission, the very first time I got to leave the 50 cal and onto the ground, I got to lead a patrol into a village where we just killed a bunch of people's sheep and we actually killed some people in a family. And so none of us cared. And our lieutenant was only there to say, hey, we're sorry, gave him some money. He didn't really care either. And the family members that were surviving, the survived family members were looking at us with the hatred and animosity. We looked at them the same exact way because we hated the Afghans.
And who profits off that?
Exactly. And I don't blame that little boy who we killed his dad, you know, and laughed about it. And here's 50 bucks for your mom or whatever. Sorry, I wouldn't blame that kid for hating us. And I know it may sound crazy, but hey, unless you killed people on accident or had to clean up bodies or done things like put a shotgun in a little kid's face and say, hey, get away from me, I'm going to blow your head off, and think that's just regular. And it's not just me. I mean, this is commonplace stuff that happens.
You know what this also reminds me of, Ryan? You posted a video about Andrew Jackson as a little boy standing up. Can you describe that?
Yeah, Andrew Jackson during the Revolutionary War, he was a young boy. I think he was around 13 or so. Maybe a little younger, but he was captured by the British. I'm not sure if he was throwing rocks at them or he did something to get them upset. So they demanded that he shine a British officer's boots as a young boy. And he looked up to him and he said, I'm a prisoner of war. I demand to be treated as such. I will not act like that. I will not shine your boots, sir. And basically, that's where he got the scar on his face that he carried for the rest of his life. The officer slashed his face. But he refused and did not shine that man's boots as a young boy, which takes a lot of courage.
But that breeds the leaders of the resistance. And unfortunately, now we live in this paradigm where, you know, it's all about debt and death. I mean, what better way of, bringing on this further? Because those young kids that we've been, brutalizing, of course they're going to get radicalized, especially when you got some other secret CIA guy going, hey, you want to fight against the Americans? Here's $1 billion and some, some weapons and war, and here's some propaganda that you can use to rally the troops. And, yeah, we got a social media manager and we can call this group ISIS and, we have green screens and we can, this is all about debt and death, and we need to, start being more empathetic to the people in Iran. We need to be more empathetic to ourselves. We need to start looking for the commonalities in each other instead of looking for these differences, and recognize that it's all about, these psychopaths at the top of the collectives that profit off of this. I mean, the only reason why military men fight as hard as they do, it's not for God and country. It's for the man next to them. And these guys know that. They know damn well if they put these guys into a shithole and give them, rules of engagement and antagonize the things, of course there's going to be fighting that's going on. And you load them up with enough military, of course we're going to bomb the shit out of them. Of course it's going to do this. Of course there's going to be more war. Of course it's going to destabilize nations and upset people. And of course there's going to be power plays for natural resources. Of course, they recognize this. They know this. They profit off of this. They perpetuate it. And the only solution is to recognize it and walk away. Don't serve in their militaries. Don't go buy stuff that you don't need. Stop watching their news. Start thinking for yourself. Start focusing on the things you can't control. Get into shape. Focus on your real wealth, your real skills, and your real assets.
I just wanted to throw the ISIL update. I'm not even going to read it, but apparently people are scared and putting, getting their Pampers on and things of that nature because there's a little boy on the video saying he's going to, apparently an ISIS boy saying, "He give me my weapon," and he holds up a gun that's as long as his body, and he manages to fire the rifle, and he's telling people, "When are you going to start acting?" And as I told you, you know, I hear people saying ISIS is scary. They're not cave dwellers. They use Twitter and stuff, and they have technology, and just, I don't know. I mean, does the ISIS boy scare you? And what are your thoughts on the big bad today?
It's just another attempt of trying to get people to worry about things outside of their control. You know, if my son had my gun, I wouldn't be afraid of him, and I wouldn't be afraid of this kid. It's just another attempt to try to get, you know, radicalize people and, you know, get people upset and worry about things outside of their control. And, you know, the long and the short of it is we're a broke nation, that has massive unemployment, generational systemic problems that are going to happen. We should not be, you know, all over the place, all over the world, spreading debt and death. And we need to focus on, as a nation, what we can't control, which is, you know, the revitalization of this country. And it's not going to happen because we've empowered the psychopaths there. So we're going to have a massive breakdown, and we're going to head into a hole for a couple of years.
In other news, Richard Richardson from offgridsurvival.com reports that Seattle is trying to ban land ownership in the name of equality. According to a draft letter obtained by the Seattle Times, Seattle Mayor Ed Murray's Advisory Committee on Housing is currently drafting a set of rules that will ban single-family zoning in Seattle. Part of the draft reads, quote, "We can still be a city for everyone, but only if we give up our outdated ideal of every family living in their own home on a 5,000-square-foot lot," unquote. Just like everything else these days, so-called racial injustice is being used to push the land ban. According to the idiotic Seattle Housing Committee, owning your own piece of land somehow makes you a racist.
This is collectivism attacking individualism. You know, the individuals that live out in the majority landmass of that state, you know, have to be more sustainable. You are a perfect example. I mean, you've got to be able to, you know, be, you know, take care of things when things go down. And they're trying to attack property rights, which is a fundamental bastion of any free market economy, and falls right in with the Communist Manifesto of outlawing, you know, private lands and stuff like that. And it's all about more collective control. And I've said before that when this dollar collapse happens, you're going to see a breakdown to the most local and responsive level. And if you have the consciousness of these radical collectivists that you're seeing in Seattle, expect a full-blown, you know, Marx, Leninist, Stalinist government come in, destroy all property rights, confiscate whatever wealth that's there, tax it, you know, take it physically. And, you know, as they try to hold up their version of whatever utopia is, and it will be an absolute horrible place to be. You know, they'll have that there. You know, Chicago will have some sort of similar thing, maybe a little bit more fascist bent to it. New York, all these major cities, they're going to survive and persevere, and they're going to get all their citizens to rally around, not the being American or the United States. They're going to see a lot of power in pushing forward their uniqueness. You know, we're New Yorkers. We can do it. Same thing in Texas. You'll get a different flavor of Texas fascism down there. And they're, you know, they're talking about this gold bank, and they're going to attract a lot of conservatives from all over the country. And Texas is definitely going to be a force to deal with. Fully expect, you know, the Bushes and, you know, these Dick Cheney neocon Republicans down there to go full retard with their dream as they seize power. You're going to see power devolve down to the most local and responsive level. This is the way of the future. There's obviously the criminal elite love to balkanize, you know, areas and get, infighting and all that other stuff, because there's massive amount of profits that are made off of it. You know, this, I fear ultimately is what is coming. You know, what do you do about it? You have to be able to, you know, be liquid. You have to be able to, you know, be able to move, from place to place as this starts to sort out. And I'm sure not everywhere is going to devolve into this hellish nightmare. There are going to be places that are going to be very sensible. They're probably going to be in the boring parts of the country. There will be different consciousnesses that will be pushed forward in forms of whatever local governments they have. You know, that's where we got to see. And maybe it's not even in the United States. Geez, maybe, you know,
somewhere else will be a better place to go if you have the means to do it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so adamant about being in precious metals, because when the paper markets collapse, governments get desperate, the things that they're going to want most is real hard cash. Who knows? Maybe we'll even buy our own plot of land. I mean, I forgot what country it was. There's some country recently that's really in a lot of Greece. Greece is selling, their properties there. You can't tell me in the depths of a global depression that there's not going to be some government so desperate for capital that they're going to sell off these unproductive lands to people who do have capital. There's no hope of saving the country, but there is a hope in revitalizing a society based off of consciously different principles. And that's what I'm positioning myself for, either to go to or be a part of, or, you know, to do something with. That's what the silver is for. It's not to, once it goes up to whatever, I'm going to go buy Lamborghinis and go off to Vegas. Like, that's never been part of the solution. It's always been about empowering and having the capital to do something on the other side.
Next article here. Sandra Bland's family infuriated at video of her arrest. This is from the Communist News Network, CNN. The family of Sandra Bland, whose death in a Texas jail has drawn national attention, expressed anger on Wednesday over a newly released video that they say offers further proof that her arrest was unnecessary. So Sandra Bland's sister, Sharon Cooper, is very upset about this. Apparently, Bland was, I did not spend hours of my life looking into this.
No.
But from what I gathered, she was arrested, had something to do with being pulled over for a blinker being out, or just some idiotic thing. And then she kills herself in her own cell?
Yeah.
I mean, whoa.
So apparently what had happened was, and I watched the video and then read their little article, and this came literally the day after I did the ABCs of the police state. And in the ABCs of the police state video, I did the Andy Griffith whistling thing. And it basically said, you know, when did protect and serve turn into brutalize and exploit? And I did the ABCs at the Rockford or some other guy put together these, you know, bullet points, by letter of what the police state has turned into. And it used to be to protect and serve. It used to be peacekeepers. They used to look to de-escalate situations. Instead of, breaking out the baton, the taser and the gun, they used to actually use words and lower the emotional tone and, find common ground and bring peace to the thing. And now this is totally not even in the lexicon of the police state nowadays. And this video is an unfortunate, perfect example where, a lady who's 28 years old, who had received two job offers, recently, saw that a cop was pulling up next to behind her, and she pulled over into the slower lane on the two-lane road. And maybe she did or didn't use her blinker, but she did it to get out of the cop's way so he could pass. Well, he used that as an excuse to pull her over. And she was upset, and I don't think fuck you pig kind of upset. She was just like, just please write your ticket and get this over with. And, he's like, sign here. And she had, she had an attitude. She was pissed off. Like, the time that it takes, she didn't hurt anybody. This is something that she shouldn't have been pulled over for. And this guy's like got this kind of lording attitude about her. He's like, put that cigarette out. And she's like, I'm inside my car. I can do whatever I want in my car. I'm not doing anything wrong. And then it totally escalated from there. To the point where he's ripping her out and pulling her out and ends up hurting her arm. And she says she can't hear her arm. She got her head slammed into the ground while she's being arrested. Some other guy came by and videotaped the rest of that. Long and the short of it is that this girl ends up in jail now for 3 days. And on the end of the third day, ends up killing herself, supposedly. They said it was a self-done asphyxiation or whatever it was. I mean, do we see how the police state has changed? Do we see how the consciousness of, from the peace officer to these stormtroopers that we've empowered? And I've said, years ago, what we allow, unconsciously to happen overseas will come back consciously to us. All these troops, these roided up steroid freaks that we send over into the military to go fight these unjust decades long never meant to be won wars with, you know, horrible rules of engagement with, you know, all this stuff, putting them in dangerous situations, watching their friends get blown up. They come back. And usually the only job that they're qualified for is for law enforcement. They now then see, the civilians as nasty civilians, and have to deal with them. And they do deal with a lot of really bad parts of our society that we don't ever see. But they never teach de-escalation of the situation, maybe letting things go and all that other stuff. They have to ratchet it up and obey my authority.
I think that pretty much settles that. Hackers are threatening to out millions of users of Ashley Madison, the dating site for married cheaters. That's Fusion.net. We don't want to spend too much time on it here, but this website's matchmaking, it's a matchmaking site. Their slogan is, "Life is short, have an affair." So this is for if you're already married and you want to go get something on the side and you don't want your spouse to know. Well, they've been hacked. And apparently the hackers, they say that they're going to start publishing information that they've acquired, employee network account information, user data, and things of that nature, until Ashley Madison is taken down off the internet. So, Chris, I know you've got some disturbing statistics that you came across. What do you
think? Yeah, so this – I don't know why this – like – this has fascinated me. I am astounded. You know the answer. I can't get over how many people use this site. 37 million people. I mean, Netflix only has like 60 million subscribers, and that's a $9 a month for all the movies you could possibly watch, you know, in the world. I mean, to me, like a no-brainer deal. And yet we almost have just as many people that are in marriages that are actively paying somebody to cheat on their spouse, and that there's 37 million people in there. And in one town, I think they said Ottawa, has 100,000 people. And I think they said 30,000 users just in Ottawa. And I'm like, God, there's 30,000 married adults in Ottawa. Like, I don't even know what the marriage rate is there. But that seems to me like literally every single person that's married, both spouse and husband, have got to be on this site. I mean, I don't know if they're fudging the numbers or not, but it just shows you how insane things are when the divorce rate is as high as it is, and then the people who are still married are cheating to do this. And then the other point I want to bring up about this is nothing is safe on the internet. I have said this about the stupid Bitcoin thing and all these other data breaches, stocks, bonds. It's all about counterparty risk. Ashley Madison is a perfect example of counterparty risk. If you fear now, rightly so, if you've been on the site, if you fear your information being stolen or used against you, think about what's going on with your digits in your bank account. It's the exact same thing. How long is it going to take for them to blow out some major bank and blame it on Russian hackers for stealing all your money as a way of covering up the inevitable implosion of this? The Bitcoin thing, I mean, we saw how Mt. Gox got taken down and flash crashed down to zero. And then eventually when they came back online and went broke again, we've seen all these people having these little digital coins stolen and they have no way of finding it and all this. Nothing is safe. When the Silk Road came out, they said, oh, this is a way of using this, you know, illusionary money, this Bitcoin that can never be traced onto this site where you can go buy drugs. Newsflash, that got taken down. Nothing is safe on the internet. If it's man-made, it could be man-hacked.
This article is from firstlook.org. Wesley Clark calls for internment camps for quote-unquote radicalized Americans. And this to me just really shows the agenda going forward. You know, shooting in Chattanooga, well, here is, you know, the agenda. Retired general and former Democratic presidential candidate Wesley Clark on Friday called for World War II style internment camps to be revived for quote unquote disloyal Americans in an interview with MSNBC's Thomas Roberts in the wake of the mass shooting in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Clark said that during World War II, quote, if someone supported Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States, we didn't say that was freedom of speech. We put him in a camp. They were prisoners of war, unquote. He called for a revival of internment camps to help combat Muslim extremism, saying if these people are radicalized and they don't support the United States and they are disloyal to the United States as a matter of principle, fine. It's their right and it's our right and obligation to segregate them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict. He also said, and this is the one that struck me the most, We have got to identify the people who are most likely to be radicalized. We've got to cut this off at the beginning. I do think that on a national policy level, we need to look at what self-radicalization means, because we're at war with this group of terrorists. And he added that not only the United States, but our allied nations like Britain, Germany, and France are going to have to look at their domestic law procedures. So, Chris, are you radical if you're not fat and you don't listen to the news and you don't eat GMO and you think voting is a joke and you're not scared of ISIL? Does that mean I'm going to be in a camp?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh,
and
no.
That's the thing. This is a trial balloon. This is what they put out there just to put the idea into the people's consciousness to see the reaction. The first thing I saw with this video is that the guy that was interviewing him was like, oh, always great to have you on, Wesley Clark. Thank you so much. Like, if somebody came onto my show and said we need to intern people for being, you know, disloyal Americans, I'd say you're a racist, fascist, like, how dare you do that? Like, we had no right to do that with the Japanese and during World War II. Right. I mean, that was a racist thing. We didn't do that with the Germans, mainly because there were so many Germans that were over here during World War II. But we did do it to the Japanese because it was a racist meaning. So, you know, here's Wesley Clark, okay? This is the guy, I played his clip of the video showing that the plan to militarize and attack and destabilize the Middle East was already in plans right after 9/11. He's the one that came out and said, they're already in Afghanistan. Are we going into Iraq? Oh no, it's worse than that, General. Here's a plan to destabilize seven nations in 7 years. Like, the debt and death plan was created after, and I would say before 9/11. And here's what General Wesley Clark, this supposed insider whistleblower, like, this was a part of a grand scheme of debt and death that they're portraying to destabilize the entire Middle East, you know, to roll over. And we're still living with this, you know, 14, 15 years later. So General Wesley Clark says, you know, put disloyal Americans in internment camps. For any of these truthers out there who go, yeah, get those radical, scary Muslim terrorists, put them in internment camps, and they use this racist thing. Just you wait, because it's only one step away from the point where they have some patriot guy that shoots up a government office that was, quote, radicalized on the internet, and then all of a sudden you're the one that they're going to be putting on the internment camp. And all these other sheeple out there are going to go, yeah, these crazy Alex Jones gun-toting guys, we need to put them in internment camps. And I forget the quote, but there was an Alexander Solzhenitsyn quote that said, I didn't say anything when they, when they attacked the protesters. I didn't say anything when they attacked the religious people. I didn't say anything to defend the other people. And by the time they came for me, there was no one left to defend me. We have to nip this in the bud, folks. There's no, there should be no allowing for individuals to be thrown in there for this. If this guy that did do this supposed shooting, and I'm not even so sure it did happen and wasn't another crisis actor event, that should have been treated as a crime. A single individual that did a single murder, that did a single crime, and not transfer it into outlaw guns, take all radicalization off the internet, all free speech off, and intern people. Like, do you see the collective agenda that they're trying to push out there? It has nothing to do with that. If this kid did do this, then it's on him. It doesn't reflect upon the billion other Muslims in the world. It doesn't reflect upon the other, hundreds of millions of gun owners in the United States. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with this one individual, and the global criminal elite are using this, and they're using their bought and paid for media, and their, you know, hand puppets. What they got, the hand up the ass of General Wesley Clark, to go out there and use these as trial balloons just to see if people will do this, see if they'll get along with this. And all these people that have turned a blind eye to what's going on, what our troops are doing to all these Muslim nations over there, are now seeing what's coming back to us with drones now flying over us, with police being more aggressive, with confiscation of property rights. That's all stuff that we did over there. We unconsciously allowed that to happen there. And if we unconsciously allow this to happen to Muslims in this country, or radicalize free thinkers who, you know, don't go along with the thing, it will come back to you.
So don't allow this to happen. General Wesley Clark should be ashamed of himself. There should be people talking about how he should be the one that should be ostracized and put out, and yet nothing. Nothing in the alternative media, nothing in the mainstream media. It's a disgusting thing that he put out there.
In other news, Trump slams McCain for being captured in Vietnam. Other Republicans quickly condemn him. By Philip Rucker, WashingtonPost.com. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump slammed John McCain, a decorated Vietnam War veteran, on Saturday by saying McCain was not a war hero because he was captured by the North Vietnamese. Quote, he's not a war hero. He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured. And people are really mad at the Donald. What do you think, Chris?
This guy is just playing a role of, the trickster magician in there, saying all the things that no other politician would say, and playing into the more radical elements of the Republican movement. He has said absurd things that if any other politician did it, they would be out of the running immediately. Anybody thinks, oh, now we got a guy like Trump. Trump would be the absolute worst choice, even more so than Hillary, I think, at this point, because he's such an egomaniacal, could do no wrong, thinks he's right about everything. He's a warmonger. He would have us into war with Iran by the time he swore in. He's so bad. So what's going to end up happening with Trump is he's going to be a big headline grabber guy for the next couple months. A lot of these other presidential candidates are going to come out, and then Jeb Bush is going to finally. I still haven't heard him speak yet. This is the most quiet campaign I've ever done, mainly because they've kept collecting a lot of money, and still is number one, number two in the polls, without saying a word or doing anything. Meanwhile, he got this field of, 28 guys now? I mean, everybody and their brother's running for president. They're all going to end up running out of money and dropping out. And the key to the game is you have to realize that Trump is going to get 100% of all the pissed off Republicans that kind of resonate with his message. But you have to recognize these other, 16 or 28 candidates there, the people that are supporting them, they're going to gravitate towards Bush because he's the only one left. That's how this works. By the time you get through a lot of these guys and they start dropping out, they'll just support the guy that they think that can win. That's all this comes down to. So same thing with Hillary. I've said it, be long and the short of it. Bush is going to win. Hillary's going to be the old war horse that they're putting up there to sacrifice the person that deserves the nomination. Just like Bob Dole against a very young Bill Clinton, all these people, they're going to use them to sacrifice them to the masses. At the end of the day, this is all trick and pony show. Trump is not a real contender. I don't know. That's all I got to say about that.
The show must go on. Rand Paul versus the tax code. YouTube video surfaced of him pledging something along the lines of the tax code would be one page long if I was elected. And then he proceeds to attack the present tax code, which is just thousands and thousands and thousands of pages. He sets it on fire, puts it in a wood chipper, chainsaws it to death. It got me inspired. I almost wanted to vote for the guy. Chris, what do you think?
It just shows how low presidential politics happen. Where are the men of great ideas and speeches and inspiration and inspiring people to their highest and best self? It doesn't work in politics. So what do they have to do? They have to do these WWE shitty, like Alex Jones would do that type shit. This is our hope. This is what gets votes. This is what's popular. Rand Paul, he's going to do this. He's got a wood chipper, blowtorch. I mean, it's insane. We are literally living in idiocracy now. It's becoming more apparent. Trump, this actual reality TV show host, garnering all the headlines. You got this other contender who claims to be this libertarian peace guy, and he's doing, publicity stunts. I mean, really? If you can't connect and inspire people, then perhaps you shouldn't be doing this. And there's no, and to Rand's defense, there's no hope. There's no speaking logic to this insane world that we've created. The only solution is, folks, to walk away and watch it all fall apart from the end, because there's no turning this around. There's no collective solution to collective problems. There's too much consciousness, too much investment, too much idiocracy flying around to have any true statesman come forward and say, hey, let's speak logic to this and let's turn this around, or we need to pull our troops from all over the world. We need to destroy the federal government's powers and return it to the states and get back. That's not ever going to happen. You know, there's too many people who are profiting off of this, and it's only when everything falls apart that's where change happens.
Palace scolds son for publishing Queen's childhood Nazi salute image. This is Reuters. Guy Falconbridge reports. Buckingham Palace scolded.
Fine. Is that not the coolest name?
I was thinking the same thing, too.
Guy Falconbridge.
Guy Falconbridge. Yes, that's the reporter of the day here. Shout out to Guy. Buckingham Palace scolded Rupert Murdoch's top-selling Sun tabloid on Saturday for publishing a previously unknown film from 1933 that appears to show Britain's Queen Elizabeth performing a Nazi salute as a young girl. The black-and-white film from the year Adolf Hitler came to power purports to show future British King Edward VIII instructing his nieces, the current monarch Elizabeth, aged about 6 or 7 at the time, and his 3-year-old sister, Princess Margaret, how to perform the Nazi salute.
They did it so good, too.
What else?
I mean, with a lot of furor.
Yikes. You're offending people. Calm down. Stop it.
We can just... Yeah. I love poking this part of history. I mean, I think one of the second or third coins that I did was Slave Queen. The British, and I did it because I still to this day don't get why silver stackers think it's okay to stack coins with her image on it. I mean, she's the ultimate elitist collectivist, criminals, their whole family is just loaded with debt and death. And yet all these people who are like, oh, we don't like the dollar and the war, and we're going to take our money out of JP Morgan and the banks and all this other stuff. And yet they go run to these national mints. And what's worse is all these people buying images of this thing, like you're worshiping her and think that she's somehow good. She's got her effigy on 60 years worth of these coins and stuff. And the main reason why I did the Slave Queen thing is to show that she is part of this criminal elite that everybody should be, at least the silver stackers, should be saying, no, I don't want her mug on my silver. I want something that reflects my consciousness, which is the reason why I started this thing. But the reason why the Slave Queen came about was to show that she's part of this very lurid part of history that you get these the captives that end up loving their captors, the psychology that goes in there, that they God save the queen, and we need the monarchy, it's great for tourism, and they're great and all this other stuff. And I don't think people know much about this queen and what their whole family's been involved with. First and foremost, their family, spanning I don't know how many hundreds of years, has been on the throne and has invaded 9 out of the 10 countries in the world. That's a fact. That no other nation, no other family has spread more debt and death than this family, okay? So while they have a great publicity and, ooh, my, that they have this look about them, everything that they have has been built off of the backs and blood of debt and death throughout the ages. You can also look at King Henry VIII. He was the future king then. He ended up did becoming a king. He was an avid Nazi supporter. He did meet Adolf Hitler. He was a Nazi supporter. They love fascism, and they supported it. The Bank of England. The Bank of England funded the rise of Hitler. Hitler came to power on a false flag, burning the Reichstag building down and blaming it on the communists. This is all stuff that's going on today. I mean, all the similarities between this and 9/11 are ridiculous. Queen Elizabeth's own husband was a Prince Albert. He's German. He went to Nazi schools. His 3 sisters are married to chief Nazi officers in there. He himself is this genocidal
a Nazi who once said that he would like to come back as a virus to deal with the overpopulation of the people. I mean, this guy's a nasty, thuggish, disgusting person, and yet all these people in Britain are like, oh, the queen, and you start looking at this, you know, even the younger son, Prince Harry, he was caught in a Nazi uniform at a Halloween party. And, you know, it would be funny and maybe rebellious for a younger kid to do that. But given the history of the British with the Nazis, even Rudolf Hess, he was so closely tied to the royal family that he made a daring attempt in the middle of World War II to fly his own plane over to England to try to beg the British to stop the fighting between themselves. And what did he end up doing? He ended up being captured and spending the rest of his life in jail. King Henry VIII or King Edward VIII had to abdicate his throne, and they say it's because of, you know, he had a mistress or whatever. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with you can't have a king of England who's an avid Nazi supporter, run the country when they're fighting against the Nazis. So this is, to me, now this image of the queen actually doing Nazi salutes, you know, maybe I'll give her a pass because she's 7 years old, but it runs in the family. They love this stuff. And I think one of the reasons why she always looks so pissed off is because she can't get away with what the Hitler or the Nazi regime gets away with. And yet that's why they have so many cameras. That's why they have these false flags like the 7/7 attacks. That's why they have this police state. It's because of this queen's ethos that's spread throughout the society. The indoctrination of the masses, the Orwellian society that's been brought up, has been based off of this. And at some point she's going to, you know, die off. Who knows when? All these evil bastards seem to live way beyond their years. You know, you got Rockefeller just celebrated his 100th birthday. You got the queen, who knows how old she is. But this is something that I people need to consciously change their view of the British crown, everything that they do. What are they unconsciously supporting when they do this stuff, and start consciously taking action?
Our last article of the week comes from thenewamerican.com. Alex Newman reports, Texas launches gold-backed bank challenging Federal Reserve. The state of Texas is setting up a gold-backed bank that will allow depositors to bypass the controversial Federal Reserve system and its fiat currency in banking and commerce, according to the state representative who authored the recently enacted law. Under the measure, passed overwhelmingly by lawmakers and signed in mid-June by Republican Governor Greg Abbott, Lone Star State officials will establish and operate the Texas Bullion Depository for anyone who would like to deposit and trade in precious metals. The implications are as big as Texas. What do you think?
So do you remember, probably 3 or 4 years ago, Utah legalized gold and silver to trade? And during the time period, I said, as the dollar collapses, there's going to be local governments that start to see the writing on the wall and start taking action and get their act together ahead of the collapse. I think this is a screaming example of what I predicted 2 or 3 years ago when the Utah started coming this way. So yeah, Texas, and I think Kyle Bass is kind of somewhere in the genesis of this. I forget, it was the University of Texas, Texas A&M, one of those things. He's a fiduciary there. And he took delivery of $1 billion worth of gold during the time when there was only like $3 billion or $2 billion worth of gold there. They took physical delivery of it. Well, they took physical delivery and kept it in New York, apparently, and, you know, in these major banks. And now they're building this depository, you know, kind of like their Fort Knox, to bring it back to the sovereign lands of Texas. And I think that this is a good step towards decentralization of power and money. You know, does that mean I would move to Texas and, you know, give all my gold and silver to the fascists over there? Hell no. But this is something that I think a lot of other states are going to start taking notice of. You know, if not ahead of time, proactively, like Texas is doing, certainly, you know, after the collapse, I think a lot of state governments are really going to assert their powers to, not only get rid of a lot of the federal laws that don't apply to them because the federal government's not going to be able to support itself and demand it. I think a lot of individual states are going to create their own, you know, their own path, their own future. And Texas, I think, is definitely going to be, you know, either assert themselves as a newly independent nation, or certainly align itself as a, you know, we do things different here. And if you don't like it, come take it. And so, like, I wouldn't put any money in this gold-backed bank. I do think that the Texas people are probably going to recover a lot quicker than many parts, certainly better than Seattle's ever going to do. But Texas will probably recover first and foremost after the collapse, mainly because they do have a lot of oil. They do have a lot of military, and now they'll have a lot of gold.
I want you to tell everyone what a life salute is and your experience with the life salute this week.
So Ryan's been talking about burpees and burpees and burpees, and I have I'm a good starter, and I can never just get my ass in gear all the time about it. And Ryan, you know, every day is talking about these epic things he's doing. And I'm like, fuck, you know, I gotta get it on. So I've been doing burpees, you know, consecutively now, and like, I've never been a runner. I never been attracted to the whole weightlifting, like, you know, like, to me, it came across very narcissistic, muscle-heady, single-minded thing. I've never been attracted to that. But then when I started viewing this in the becoming a full man, I needed to recognize that I'm not, you know, bringing out the warrior in me and bringing out the physical fitness. I spent, you know, last, almost 7 years on the computer, and I got the blogger body going, and not saying that, you know, I'm overweight and I can't do stuff, but I'm certainly not in my Marine Corps mode, weight. So, I made a vow every morning, to do 20 minutes of burpees. And so it's something that, you know, there's no driving to the gym. There's no, you know, no running or anything like that. It's just get up and get down, get up and get down, get up and get down. And you can always do one more. And that's the one thing I like about it. So as I'm in this state, I started to tell Ryan what he already knew, is that it becomes almost meditative. And it's a great exercise, I think, that represents what you need to do in life. You need to get down, get in touch with the earth, and then push yourself up from the challenges that are pushing down upon you, and then leap up to the sky to see how high you can be. So as I was doing these burpees, I was like, well, burpees is kind of a weird name for this. And I never liked, you know, junk silver. So, you know, why not rename it to, you know, life salutes? Because that's really what life is about. It's about, you know, getting down, getting in touch with nature. And then it's about pushing up against the resistance. And then it's about, you know, leaping up to the sky to be as high as and best as you can. And the thing I loved about it is it was almost meditative as I got going on doing this. And while I've only committed to doing, you know, 20 minutes a day, I could see myself doing, you know, hundreds of these, you know, at a time. What a better way of starting off your day than just doing that. This is not about, you know, how many, you know, hundreds of pounds of muscle or plates that you can put on a barbell and, oh, I can do this thing. And it's not about how far you can do. It's how many times can you get up repetitively and train your body to always do that. I think it's an exercise that anybody can do. I don't care how fat you are, how out of shape you are. If you can do anything consistently for 20 minutes, I think it's a great exercise. It's no impact. So you're not, you know, I know there's a lot of people who got joint problems and stuff like that. They can't run, so they don't do anything. And I don't care how big you are, how old you are. This is an exercise you can do for the rest of your life. I don't care if you're 90 years old, you can get down and you can get up. And I don't care if you do 2 in 20 minutes or you do, you know, 130 or whatever I did the first day that I tried it. And then, you know, it's something that you can just continue to do. If you want to do, you know, longer, do longer. If you want to do, I mean, Ryan, how many did you do in an hour?
The test this week, the challenge was to do as many burpees as you could in an hour. I was shooting for 600, but I wimped out and did 546.
So we're like, Ryan did that for an hour. And I'm like, God, how many is that? I said that's like 9 a minute. And I said, that's like 180 during the time that I did 130. And he did it 3 times longer. So when I said, Ryan, you know, wow, Ryan, how'd you do that? And he said, you know, Chris, I tell you what, a year ago when I was still smoking, I couldn't do it. But it's the progressive nature of doing anything. And this is kind of gets in tune with my philosophy on stacking silver. Like,
yeah, you may not be able to buy a whole bunch of silver at once. You know, maybe you don't have a lot of money. But I tell you what, if you consistently do it every single day, you'll be amazed at what you can do, you know, what kind of pile you can have after years of experience. And it's the same thing that's going to happen with this. I'm going to continue to keep doing this one exercise. I'm not going to change my I'm also cutting out sugar. I'm not cutting anything else out. I'm going to drink a gallon of water. I'm doing these burpees, and I'm going to cut out sugar, and I'm going to see how much weight I can lose in the, you know, before I get to see Ryan again. Highly encourage anybody that's listening to this, get off your butt, get off of YouTube, and start doing these, you know, and if you just do 20 minutes, I'm not asking you to do anything that's, too much. Like, you know, Ryan talks about these Spartan races and tries to motivate people that way. I think that's too intimidating for the grand majority of people. Just do 20 minutes of burpees. And all it is standing up, getting down on your knees, laying down, doing a push up, pushing up, standing up again, and then jumping into the sky. That's one burpee. And I think that if you can just do that over and over again, doesn't matter how fast you do it, doesn't matter anything, over time, if you do that every single day, you're going to see a dramatic improvement in your physical fitness. It's cardio, it's muscle building. You know, if you do it, you know, 120 times, you've done 120 pushups. I mean, when's the last time you've done one pushup? And it's something that you'll never not be able to do the next one. That's something where it's not an exhaustive thing where you go, oh, I can't push up one more time. Because by the time you've jumped up and stood up, you've allowed that muscle to rest just enough to get enough energy to go to the next level. So, huge proponent of this. I thank Ryan for introducing this to my life. I think it's meditative. I think it's progressive. I think anybody can do it. And it's an easy answer. And the other thing I like about it is you don't need any special equipment. There's no pre-shake, super energy bullshit. There's no thing. This is you and yourself. You could do this in a prison cell. You can do this, you know, anywhere at any time. And the wonderful thing is it teaches your brain that you can do this and you don't need any, you don't need any crutches. I think a lot of these guys who are, you know, all jacked up, you know, super fitness guys, well, they can only do that because, you know, they have these routines and these, you know, crutches and stuff. You know, they have to have these special training, these special shoes and special this and special that. And if they don't have it, when the time does come when, you know, we're going to face very difficult times, they've almost trained their mind to think like they need these other things in order to perform their best. And one of the things I like about this is you don't need anything, just you and your will to continue to take the next one.
That's the beauty of it, is it's the opposite consciousness of the fitness industry, literally. You don't need – many people, they hear about exercise and working out, and they just associate that with the stereotypical – you know, well, you're kind of a dumb muscle head and doing it for the wrong reasons, which most people do it to look better, the aesthetics. They want to look better, then they have to buy products that are marketed to them so they can feel like they're, you know, making a difference with their pre-workouts and their caffeine and the supplements and the protein shakes, all these other things. And I was into that for a little bit, but I still felt like I wasn't being true to myself when I was going that route. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I looked into these bodyweight exercises, the Spartan lifestyle. One, it's made me more hostile towards the Liberty movement because I really do feel like they're all show and no go, myself included, because mm-hmm. I see these people that embrace the Spartan lifestyle will be able to handle any challenge that's thrown their way because they're training for challenges. And with the burpee, especially, it's all about endurance, willpower. You know, I know people, Chris, think it may be crazy. If you've only experienced exercise from an aesthetic perspective or you just haven't done it that much, mm-hmm. to think about someone who says, you know, exercise or training is a mind, body, and soul experience, that sounds kind of weird, or you just might not get it. I tell you what, you do burpees for an hour, you're going to talk to God. You are going to get a mind and body and even maybe a soul connection.
Yeah, it's very meditative.
Yes. You know, regular exercise, weightlifting doesn't do that to you.
No.
To me.
Yep. And it's attuned to the runner's high. It's attuned to, you know, I was getting down, I was thinking like, you know, this is what the Muslims do. I mean, they kind of bow down and, you know, do that. Like, I don't know if they're doing burpee. I didn't really look at what their prayer thing is, but I know that they're bowing down and getting up and doing all these things. But this is, you know, it's a great exercise. I think it's much more than, you know, just physicalness. You're right. It does bring in this connection, you know, this meditative process. And the thing I like about it is As you're counting and as you're doing this pace, it's repetitive enough, and it really calms your mind and gets you focused on the process that's there. Another thing I told you when we were on this call, I said probably the most difficult physical challenge that I ever had to do was this 21-mile hump in the Marines in infantry school. We had the shitty leather boots that weren't waterproof. It was raining. It was cold. We had to do 21 miles with these packs that were 50 pounds dry, and then they got soaked and were soaked. And I had blisters, the compounded blisters on the bottom of my heels that were the entire heel. I mean, the doc cut it open and pus just flew out the back of it. And I made that hump by only focusing on the next step, because I knew that if I thought about the 21 miles I had to go, if I thought about the weight that I had to carry, if I thought about the shitty conditions, if I thought about all these things, I would have stopped immediately. But I just kept saying to myself, next step, next step, next step, next step. And that's what you're going to have to do when the times get tough. You need to be able to not think about the family that you got to carry on your back. You got to not think about how long and hard the road's going to be. You just need to think about what next step is. What's the next thing I got to do? And I think these burpees are a great example of doing the next one, the next one, the next one, and staying focused and knowing that you can do it. And there's no stopping you so long as you keep your mind active. This is another thing that you'll learn when you've pushed yourself to the extreme. Your body will do anything your mind says it can do. If you said stop, your body's going to stop the next step. If your mind says I can keep going, you're going to keep going until your mind says stop. And that's what you need to learn ahead of this collapse.
And the last thing I'll add in there, and another reason why, you know, I may speak kind of hostile sounding or whatnot, is I really do believe from my own experience, you know, if you're really upset, whether you're angry or sad, whatever it is, just do burpees until you're not anymore. I'm telling you. My experience this week, when I started my quest to do 600 burpees, I was mad when I first started. The first 100 or so were done out of anger and spite. But after I got past 150, 200, I wasn't angry anymore. I had no spite left. By the time I was done, brother, when I hit the 546 and the alarm went off, I stumbled into my house, passed out on the hardwood floor, and slept on the floor like a baby. Woke up like a million bucks the next day.
Yep.
Still smelly and slept on a hardwood floor, but it felt great. I showered, and for the rest of the day, I was so energized, so happy just to be with my children, because it was reiterated to me what's important in this life. And it's not the fearful, crazy, bad stuff. It's focusing on the people that matter in your life. And another great reason, those burpees, man, they change your frame of reference. You're not Lewis and Clark. You're not Shackleton. You're not Frederick Douglass. You're not in Afghanistan. You have it so much better than those examples. But yet we still want to act like victims and say, woe is me, my life is so hard, or we don't deserve this. Who's to say we don't deserve this? Who's to say humanity's not facing an incredible challenge for a reason? Who's to say that you're not a part of the solution and not the problem? And so, again, I get mad at that. I think people are selling themselves short. I have been selling myself short, hence the anger at myself. And that's why I'm so adamant. I don't want others to do that, because I know there's a better way. I've experienced the high of living an incredible, supercharged, energetic, positive life when I came home from Afghanistan, just to be happy to be alive. And it went away. And I wondered, where did that go? How can I ever attain that excitement again? And I went to, you know, into the conspiracy world, and that just got me further away from ever finding that. It wasn't until I committed to really changing myself, Chris, with exercise, positive books, positive audiobooks, and positive people in my life, and a lot of work. That's the other thing, a lot of work to stay true to that cause. It wasn't until I've started doing that that I have magically acquired this energy that I had 5 years ago when I came home from Afghanistan. I don't need 6 hours of sleep anymore. I'll work out 2-3 times a day, and it doesn't bother me because I've changed the way I look at it. I'm happy. I'm going. I'm doing things regular people think is insane. I just do it every day. And I'm sharing that with people because, you know, I never thought a year ago even, I never thought I'd ever be able to feel that high of coming home from a deployment zone and thinking you're going to die. to America and just being so happy, man, I can go anywhere I want. I'm not going to get blown up. I'm not going to die today. Just so great. And then it goes away because you get used to it. We have it so good here. Even with as bad as it is, we still do. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I don't mean to rant, but man, you do 500 burpees, 200, 100. You're going to start appreciating what you have in life and stop whining and focusing on all the bad stuff that's out there, which to me, that's the enemy. That's Mr. Resistance. That's what they want you to do. Stop being a victim. Be the freaking winner.
So that's the challenge out there. 20 minutes a day, every single day, no excuse. First thing when you get up in the morning, you can do it when it's quiet, calm. If you choose to take it on, do it three times a day. If you do an hour or whatever, that's whatever. Everybody just commit to do these stupid little burpees. They're not difficult to do. All it is getting down on your knees, doing a push up, coming up, standing up and jumping up. You know, that's it. Do 20 minutes. I don't care how many you do. And then, you know, if people want to leave comments every day, like hey, how many they did and the progress that they're doing, you know, that'll help motivate. But I think this, God, if there was just one like real physical thing that you can control that would make a massive improvement in people's lives, I think this is it.
With all that's going on in this country right now, we sure could use George. Maybe two Georges. George Washington and George Patton. The courage, the character, could go a long way in making things move along more nicely, constructively, and prosperously than they are right now. Of course, their strategies on how to get things done would not sit very well with the fence-sitting Enochs of today, and there would probably be a lot of collateral damage to explain. Still, it's an uplifting daydream to have on a hot summer afternoon. If I was in the mood to discuss what this country is going through right now, Patton's words would make for a super premise to blast off from. I use Patton's quote today because I like it. No, I love it. It fires me up. Nothing like a good old goddammit or fuck you to get a man motivated to get up off his ass and take action on something. And motivating and inspiring ourselves, kicking our own ass, is what we warriors are all about here. Patton knew how to do it. He was a master of it. And he believed it was his destiny. You gotta love that. That's why his legacy is so admired and inspiring today. He kicked ass and never cared to take any names. It didn't matter who the enemy was. To him, they all had the same name. Bastards. The goddamn cowards you need to kill are the pests inside your mind talking you out of getting out there and conquering the life that is yours for the taking. To make it happen, you have to kill the goddamn bastards off. Swat them down. Smash them into squishy, unrecognizable goo. Visualize blowing them to smithereens in such a violent manner that you can feel the disintegrated ooze running down the inner walls of your skull. Render them unidentifiable. Look, in many ways you've been lied to when it comes to how to get your life act together. Most of the crap out there you can turn to for guidance is touchy-feely, telling you to look in your heart and find peacefulness, have patience and calm understanding, and learn to unconditionally love everyone else in the world. You know, hugs and kisses, the chicken soup stuff. Now don't get me wrong, I too can find some inspiring stories in that stuff, and there's nothing wrong with inspiration touching you on an emotional level that tugs at your heartstrings. But the truth is, life, your everyday life, isn't like that. Real life is a fucking meat grinder, not a warm, cuddly, and cozy bowl of chicken soup. Peace and love and serenity and incense burning and sitting in the shape of a pretzel and humming kumbaya isn't going to lead you to your promised land, nor destiny. To get there, you have to war. Take it from Patton, a warrior general whom God saluted when he showed up at the pearly gates. War is hell. Nothing is pretty about it. Nothing smells good about it. Nothing feels good about it. It is ugly. It stinks. It is pain. This includes the war you must engage in your life to rid yourself of your doubts and weaknesses so that you can fulfill your destiny. There is no peace without there first being war. Between enemies, one good and the other evil, there first has to be war for there to make peace.
Good must slaughter evil. Good must destroy evil's will to fight. Good must bring evil not just to its knees, but to its death. You cannot find or make compromise with the doubts and weaknesses within you. There is no way of peacefully disarming them. You kill them, violently and viciously. To get in the mood for becoming your own one warrior nation, eat your meat raw and bloody, and keep your motivation aggressive and brutish. That's going to do it for this week's podcast. Hope to see you next week. Until then, keep stacking, do some burpees, drink some water, and we will see you next week.